Hatch did, and it would have gone badly for us if the Navs had been better trained or equipped. They had plasma guns, and there were at least 100 of them. Unfortunately, they had no armor, just simple vac suits and those weaponized harnesses. "Wide beam, Sargon," I shouted. "Burn them out of those suits." He cranked the aperture on his cannon to a broad cone and fired a sweeping beam. Enemy fire flashed past him, and a few bolts struck among our troops despite our best efforts. We'd all hugged up against the walls and the floor. But Sargon's beam took out a lot of the enemy. At least 20 Narbs popped and steamed like water balloons put to the torch. The rest began retreating in a near panic. "Grenades, Harris!" I shouted. "Don't let them pull back through the next hatch." "Don't worry, sir," he said, rushing forward with a trio of his people at his back. They all had plasma grenades in their gauntlets. "We're not letting them pull this shit again." When there wasn't any other good choice, Harris could be extremely brave and effective. He lobbed his plasma grenade into the massed and wallowing throng of Narbs. Two of his companions did the same. But one man tripped and went down. At least, I thought he tripped, but then I saw he'd caught a bolt and been killed outright. The Narbs were firing with wild desperation. Since we were bottled up, one of them had been bound to get lucky. The plasma grenade in the dead man's hand, unfortunately, was glowing and active. I gripped the armor of the two men nearest to me and pushed them both to the deck, calling out a warning. The grenade went off. Harris and his companions were lifted up and knocked flat. They groaned, coughed, and crawled over the deck in agony. "Advance," I ordered. "Mow down the survivors." I walked up to Harris, knelt beside him as my men finished off the pack of panicked, humping Narbs. It was a slaughter. "Harris," I asked, "can you walk?" He made an incomprehensible growl of pain. "Just do it, you fuck." I shot him. And I shot one other survivor who was similarly injured. I recorded their deaths on my tapper and advanced with about 20 men into the bridge itself. Here, the chamber was as quiet as a tomb. One Magua sat on a throne of what looked like smooth stone. "Magnate Slur," I addressed him. "You're hereby captured. If you cooperate, detestable scum," he said, interrupting me. "The battle fleet will scrub your race from the heavens. We'll kill every last human on every world in this province, and we'll determine which species aided you in this accursed act. You have no honor, no right, no..." I shot him. I've killed a few Magua before, and they always die easily. This one was no exception. He flopped and made farting noises, then finally slid out of his monolithic throne to curl up on the deck like a daddy longlegs. A wide smear of indigo-colored goo was left on the throne behind him. "That, troops, is a galactic," I announced. "Take a good look. They're nothing. You can kill them the same as anything else, maybe even easier. Remember that." The survivors from my unit stood around in a circle and stared. They'd been bred their entire lives to think of the Magua as being akin to gods. Like the pharaohs of ancient Egypt, these alien creatures were supposed to be above us in every way. I knew from personal experience that this conditioning could be broken. Staring down at a dead god went pretty far in that direction, so I let them have a good long look. The next day or two was rough. We had to take the ship out of warp, turn it around, and head back to Arcturus. All the while, we were out of communication with our legion because we'd knocked out the deep link. We had no idea whether or not Battlefleet 921 had showed up and killed everyone. If we hadn't had Natasha, I told my haggard crew some 40 hours later, we'd have flown all the way back to the core systems.
"Truth,"
Carlos said, beaming. He was happy just to be alive this long. Keevy, Harris, Leeson, they'd all bit the bullet on this trip. Natasha basked in my praise, and I thought she really did deserve it. She was our last surviving tech, and our best. She'd figured out the interface, the navigational system, the works. I'd have blown this ship up like a monkey with a stick of dynamite in each hand, I told her.
You could say that again, sir,
Sargon chimed in. After we were all finished praising her up and down, we got to the grim business of manning an unfamiliar ship full of dead Nerbs.
If there's one thing I would change, Sargon said, it would be that final wide-angle blast of energy into the Nerbs. They smell so bad when you cook them.
That's right, and their rations aren't much better. As a semi-aquatic race, the Nerbs ate slop that stank of rotting fish. Unfortunately, old fish seemed to smell the same on their planet as it did on ours. When we finally arrived at Arcturus, I had Natasha park us far from the central sun or any of the planets. I wanted to see what was what before we moved in.
I'm not getting much from these sensors, she complained.
Well, our ship is pretty far from here, and there are time effects, too, due to the distance, right? She gave me a look I knew all too well. It was the look of someone smart trying not to call me a dummy.
It doesn't quite work that way, she said,
letting me down easy.
Light does take about 4 hours to travel from Rogue World to here, yes, but it's been doing it all along. So we're seeing the planet as it was 4 hours ago from here, and it's been visible since the moment we arrived.
Okay, I said. Makes sense, sort of. What do we have?
I don't see Nostrum, she said. That's what worries me.
Can they see us yet?
No, they can't see us until the 4 hours have passed.
After thinking about it, I nodded. Let's move in, then. The only other thing I can think of doing is turning tail and flying this wreck to Earth, but I don't think parking a Nerb ship in orbit would make anyone at Central happy with me.
I should say not. That would be clear evidence of an entirely new extinction-level offense against the Galactics. You've got to know, James, that we should probably just destroy this vessel right now.
What? I couldn't believe I was hearing this kind of reasonable thinking from her. I'd expected her to be so fascinated with the alien technology all around us, she'd skip right by such logical conclusions.
Think about it, she said with sudden intensity. If the battlefleet shows up in the next hour, they'll see us hanging around here and begin trying to contact us. Once they figure out that only humans are aboard...
Huh, I said. That would be bad.
That's right. Every minute we spend in this system, we risk discovery and the extermination of our entire species.
I frowned. What are we supposed to do then? Self-execute like that piss-bag slur told us to? I'm not interested in that.
I know, she said. But the risk, it's tremendous.
Her words concerned me. They gave me a headache, in fact. I'd already searched the entire ship's stores and found nothing in the way of alcohol, either. Apparently the Nerbs had never heard of it. That thought alone was almost enough to make me feel sorry for the arrogant green bastards. Almost.
Chapter 55 We spotted a starship about 13 hours later. I was dozing at the time in that hazy state between dreams and wakefulness. I knew people were around me, becoming excited, talking faster with each passing second. Snorting awake, I found Carlos looming over me.
"Wake up, McGill," Carlos said. "We found her. We found the Nostrum."
"Okay," I said, rubbing my face. "Okay, good. Now get out of my face." I sat up and shook myself like a dog.
Natasha, where's Natasha?
She's on the bridge. She spotted the ship. It has to be ours.
Fixing Carlos with a sudden stare, all kinds of bad scenarios played out in my mind.
Has to be? I asked. As in, it's not confirmed yet?
Has to be,
he repeated stubbornly. I've known Carlos for a long, long time. He was one of the first men I'd ever killed, directly, and he'd likewise offed me upon occasion. Sometimes that sort of history builds a connection between two people. It was kind of like we'd been stuck in a bad marriage for decades. One thing I knew about him was that he was more than capable of self-delusion. All men were, but he had a special knack for it. When he wanted something badly enough, well, in his mind, it became an undeniable truth. Lurching to my feet and snatching up my gear, I marched toward the bridge. Carlos followed me, muttering about something, but I didn't care what it was. For all their arrogance and softness of body, the Narbs didn't run a luxury ship. They didn't know about pillows or beds, really. Someone had theorized this was due to their being an aquatic race. They had bathtubs in their quarters instead of beds, and I guess they were used to just filling them up and sleeping in there when they felt the urge. That didn't work for humans, though. I didn't even try it. Consequently, I'd been sleeping in a dry bathtub for too long. If you've ever tried that, you know you wake up with a crick in your neck every damn time. Thumping up to the bridge, I rubbed my neck and cursed the whole way. I didn't put on my helmet until I sighted Natasha. She didn't like people being out of safety gear while aboard an enemy ship. We were all in the habit of taking our helmets off when she wasn't looking, mind you, but we knew well enough to put them back on again when she spotted us.
"Hey,"
she said, giving me a hard look.
"Do you know how long it takes to asphyxiate in a hard vacuum, sir?"
As a matter of fact, I've done it a few times. You might get a minute in there if you—
"No,"
she said.
"You get less than that. Your blood will boil within—"
"Look, specialist," I told her. "Have you spotted an Earth ship or not?"
"I think so,"
she said, sighing and turning back to her instruments. She'd interfaced her mobile computer, which was about 1,000 times more powerful than the tappers everyone had embedded into their forearms, into the NARB ship's console. From there, she was able to work an interface of her own design. It was quite a feat of hacking, even if the ship was built along Imperial guidelines.
"You think so?" I demanded. "What's that mean?" "I mean there's something out there, and it isn't an Imperial ship. I think it's ours."
"How can you not know?"
"It's... here, just take a look."
She transferred the imagery and data she was looking at to the main console. There, I saw the Arcturus system laid out in all its glory. The world of the rogue scientists was there, forth from the star, looking as dark and unpleasant as always.
"You see that?"
she asked.
"Peeking out from behind the planet?"
"No, wait. Yeah, I see something. A little silver line. Is that a ship?"
"It has to be. It's not a satellite, natural or unnatural. I've plotted its orbit. It's not orbiting. It's stationary in a position that can't be maintained normally without a prohibitive amount of thrust."
"Have you contacted them yet?" Natasha looked at me.
"I was waiting for you to make that decision."
Suddenly I knew why Carlos had come to wake me up. No one could make this call but me. The stakes were high. Her eyes watched me as I thought about it. I was glad she wasn't telling me all the pros and cons. They were obvious. If we contacted this ship and it wasn't from Earth, we'd be revealing our hand. It could be very bad if it was some element of Battlefleet 921 that we didn't know about. After all, we hadn't seen the fleet in a century. The Galactics might do things differently now.
"Do it,"
I told her.
"Contact them."
She nodded, clearly unsurprised.
"Done,"
she said, touching a spot on her screen.
"We're not identifying ourselves. We're demanding that they do so. That way, if it isn't a human ship, they might not realize we aren't the Narbs. It should buy us time."
"Good thinking. How long until we can expect?" The radio began squawking even as I spoke. While I'd slept, we'd been closing in on that troublesome planet where our earlier siege had cost us time and lives. Besides, it wasn't too far to go for communications traveling at the speed of light.
"Identify, or be destroyed," said a robotic-sounding voice.
I frowned at the console she'd hooked up. "That doesn't sound like Graves or Deitch."
"It's not,"
Natasha agreed.
"Analysis gives it a 95% chance it's an AI voice."
"Really?" I asked. "AI is running that ship?"
"Seems like it."
Narrowing my eyes with a new suspicion, I made a spiraling hand gesture. She transferred the channel to my helmet, letting me talk to whatever it was on the other end of the line. "Unknown vessel," I said. "Are you allied with the rogue planet you're orbiting?" There was no answer, even after I waited 20 seconds or so, the length of time I'd waited before. I was just about to repeat my query when Natasha stiffened in alarm.
"They fired missiles," she said. "Two of them. We've got incoming, McGill."
That surprised me quite a bit. I've had missiles fired at me any number of times, of course, but I'd been under the general impression we were having a conversation. Apparently, I'd been misinformed. "Get our defenses up," I ordered Natasha. She threw her hands up in defeat, shaking her head.
"I don't know how to do that. I've spent every hour figuring out how to fly this thing, not how to make her fight."
"Give me any info you have on those missiles," I told her. "Are they similar in design to the X-ray missiles that were fired at us before?" Natasha worked her computer for what seemed like a very long time, but which had to be under a minute.
"Yeah,"
she said, nodding emphatically.
"Same spectrography on their chemical trail. Same general size, acceleration.
Can we outrun them?" She shook her head.
"We'd have to go warp again. I don't know. I'll start working the calculations."
"You do that," I told her. "Your timer here, is this accurate? It says we've only got 4 minutes."
"That's a best guess."
"Great." Thinking fast, I opened the channel again. "Hostile ship," I said. "There's no cause to fire on us. We're from—"
"Your vessel has been identified," the artificial voice spoke up, interrupting me. "It's been classified as enemy, and will be treated as such."
"You're making a mistake. This is Centurion James McGill. We are allied with the rogues, the scientists of Arcturus IV.
There was no immediate response, and I became a little nervous. This was my first time commanding a starship, and it looked like it might be my last.
The two missiles streaked toward our defenseless, stolen ship without pausing. They were going to go off when they got close and irradiate us all. We'd be as dead as fish sticks in a microwave after that.
"Contact the planet directly," I told Natasha. "Call up Florimel for me." "Last I heard, she was aboard Nostrum," Natasha pointed out.
"I know that, but you have to give it a try."
Shrugging, she did as I asked. The channel crackled, but we didn't hear anything.
"Florimel, anyone down there? Your robot ship has gone mad. It's attacking us, and we haven't done a thing to make it hostile."
Finally, a blip came back. "Is this the man known as James McGill?"
asked a male voice.
"Yes, it certainly is."
"If you're innocent, we suggest you run from our vessel. It is automated, and it will protect us at all costs. If you don't flee, you will be destroyed."
"Where'd you get this ship anyway?" I demanded.
"We've always had it hidden in the system. We didn't reveal it because we weren't sufficiently threatened."
"Great. Well, can't you switch it off?"
"It's a doomsday device. We've accepted our erasure, but we intend to greatly harm those who remove us from the cosmos."
"This action on your part is premature," I insisted. "Turn off your robot dog and—"
"This conversation no longer serves any purpose,"
the guy said.
"We wish you well. May your last 2 minutes of existence be enjoyable."
After that, the channel closed. I stared at the screen with my mouth hanging open. "Well, shit a brick," I said. "They don't even seem to care."
"I'm charging up the warp engines, but we need time, James."
Contacting the AI ship again, I demanded that it answer me. "Hey, 1, 2, 3, wake up, robot," I said. Nothing came back, and I looked down at Natasha.
"Can it hear me?"
"I think so, yes."
"AI ship," I said. "You've gone mad. Slow down those missiles and we'll leave your system. You'll be a hero having defended—"
"Your pointless communications are wasting my processing time," the ship complained. "You must cease this idle chatting."
"Wasting your processing time?" I demanded, incensed.
I'll have you know you're about to blow up an Allied ship, one that would be willing and able to help you defend this system against the real battle fleet. I've never even heard of such a stupid AI system.
This is the McGill? Asked the voice.
I already said so, moron.
Don't antagonize it, James,
Natasha hissed at me plaintively.
Your ship would do battle with the Imperial fleet that's expected to arrive shortly?
The AI asked.
Yes, of course. We don't have much in the way of—
Natasha reached up a hand, placing it over mine and shaking her head.
Oh, let me repeat. Yes, we will fight alongside you. We'd be glad to.
The AI ship didn't answer. Natasha's eyes were huge, hopeless. She reached up a hand again, grabbed mine, then stood and gave me a kiss.
You always were an idiot, James, she said. I don't know what I saw in you.
That's when the lead missile went off. I saw a bright spot like a star being born among the heavens. Was that how X-rays looked when they fried you? I didn't know, but I figured I was about to find out.
Chapter 56.
For about 10 long seconds, I figured we were stone dead. I could tell by the way Natasha was acting all lovey-dovey that she thought we were goners, too. But then, slowly, everyone relaxed. We weren't dead. There was no way the beams from those missiles could have taken so long to reach us.
What happened?
I asked. Natasha let go of my hands and sat down again. She checked over her instruments.
The X-rays went off, but they didn't strike our ship. They were either aimed badly
or nothing, I whooped. The AI changed its mind. Hot damn, winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Carlos stared at me as I celebrated life.
McGill, he laughed. That's got to be the most retarded thing I've ever heard come out of your mouth. Chicken dinner? What's that even mean?
I gave him a hard look.
Oh, he said. I mean, you sounded retarded, sir.
That's better. I would have smacked him, but I was too happy to be alive right now.
Sir,
Natasha said.
The lab people are trying to contact us.
Sitting down with a huge sigh of relief, I picked up a strange-looking headset. It looked rubbery and crusty. What are you supposed to do with this? I asked her dubiously.
You're supposed to put it in your mouth, Carlos said unhelpfully. It's like a suppository, but it goes in the other.
I kicked at him and he skittered away. Carlos was good at dodging well-earned blows. He'd had a lot of practice.
You hold it up to your ear, Natasha said. The sound comes out of that bulb,
but I wouldn't, like, touch it to your ear.
Yeah, it's sticky, I said. These nerves are disgusting creatures. I'm glad we spaced all the bodies. The bulb thing began talking to me. Screwing up my face into a scowl, I held it close enough to listen. Hello?
McGill,
said a feminine voice.
Is that you?
Florimel. Yeah, it's me.
You're still alive. Did anyone die?
Nope, not yet.
I'm so sorry,
she said.
The Defender is a doomsday weapon. You have to understand.
How do you mean?
It's meant to fight on after we're all dead. We built it for the cephalopods originally, but they never deployed it.
Why didn't you guys use it against Nostrum as soon as we showed up to invade?
We honestly didn't think we had to.
I found that somewhat offensive. She was saying that they thought they could beat us with one hand tied behind their backs. To be honest, though, they were probably right.
Okay, I said. Why didn't it kill us?
We thought that it might have done so. We're not in complete control of it. The ship has advanced AI, and it thinks for itself.
Huh. You mean you set a big dog on us without knowing if it would kill us or not? That's not very nice.
You have to understand, James. You've been gone for days. When the Nairb ship warped out, Everyone assumed that your boarding party had been lost.
Thinking about it, I could see how they might make that mistake. After all, there had only been my single unit aboard. How did Nostrum do against the invading gargoyle things?
The Guardians? They caused some wreckage and some deaths, but they were destroyed. Your Legion dealt with them quickly enough, but they did serve to convince Tribune Deitch that you'd all been lost and the mission was a failure.
Yeah, I said, trying to look at it from their point of view. We'd been sent to board the enemy ship, but instead of returning, a pack of monsters had come back through the portal instead. Then the target ship took off and vanished. That had to have looked very bad for us. So they took the Legion back to Earth? I asked.
That's right.
And they just left you out here?
It sounds harsh, I know, Florimel said. But I understand your people. They're hoping the battle fleet will come here and annihilate us, but then stop. They're hoping that if they're nowhere near the scene, Earth won't get blamed.
But they must have been worried if they thought we'd failed. The Nerbs could have contacted the battle fleet by now or joined their ranks.
That's true,
she said.
They didn't know what had happened, and they weren't happy about that.
So what now? Are you going to stay here and fight?
Yes,
she said firmly. How about you and I get together and talk? I asked her. Florimel hesitated, and I caught sight of Natasha's reaction. She'd rolled her pretty little eyes at me. That wasn't too much of a surprise, because I knew she still cared about me that way.
All right,
she continued.
You're in range now, so I'm sending another gateway link up to you. You'll be able to move from your ship to my planet.
Sure enough, a gateway kit appeared in the hold. It was kind of freaky watching the backed-up vids of its arrival. We set up the kit and soon had two humming poles a meter apart. Before I walked through, I had a chance to marvel at the tech. These nerds really had come up with some neat tricks. What if the lab people had decided to send us a bomb instead? I supposed that if that had been the case, I'd never have known what had hit us. When I stepped through, Florimel and a team of her aides in white suits were there to meet me. They looked like they were curious about me, but they were also wary. Florimel smiled, but the rest didn't. Taking this as an invitation, I stepped right up and gave her a hug. Her eyes were wide in alarm, but her smile returned after a minute. I got the impression that hugging was weird to them, like one of those double-cheeked kisses French guys always handed out in the old vids from Earth. In any case, she liked my personal greeting and led me up into the nicer, cleaner region of the dome. "Where'd you hide that ship all this time?" I demanded, pointing up through the diamond-hard blue glass at the nighttime sky overhead. Arcturus was well below the horizon, and the local stars were big and blazing through the relatively thin atmosphere of Rogue World. The ship itself was visible up there, too. It blotted out a portion of the starscape and reflected the distant light of the central star. Like a silver-white triangle, it hung up there, motionless above the planet.
"It hides itself. It's been up there all along, with a light shield surrounding it. We activated it when Nostrum left us. The battle fleet will come now, and all will be lost."
I lowered my eyes back to hers. She was staring up at the sky. I could tell this was an emotional time for her, and I could understand why. But I didn't get all of it, like her people's strong motivations. "Why'd you fight so hard to stay here?" I asked her.
"This is our home," she said simply. "I know it must look like a lifeless rock to you, but we were born here."
"That's it? You're defending your home turf?"
"It's not just that. We lived for a half century as slaves to the cephalopods. We don't want to go back to being slaves to the galactics now. All our life's works would be gone as well, even if we did submit to survive. Isn't that so?"
I thought about it, then nodded. She had a good point. Her work was illegal. Even if by some miracle of diplomacy these rogues were allowed to live here under their bubble, they would never be permitted to continue inventing things that other star systems in the Empire no doubt had the patent on. The very idea was unthinkable to any Nerb or Magua.
Yeah, I said. I get it. You couldn't even do the work you've dedicated your life to. So how are we going to keep you breathing?
You can't, James,
she said. And she pointed up into the skies again at her automated ship.
But the AI ship might. It's very powerful. It might just be able to stop the battle fleet.
I laughed in her face, but she didn't seem to get offended. She didn't smile, either. She meant it. Flora Mel was a hard case. She didn't want to leave her world even though I offered her safe transport out. She didn't want that, and she didn't want to admit she was going to lose this fight, either.
We've got defensive capabilities we haven't revealed yet,
she told me. Really? Why didn't you use them against us, then?
I have to admit, we didn't think you stood a chance against us. When you personally led a mission into our dome, we were shocked. All our predictions said it couldn't be done by an external ground force. We were wrong.
You sure as hell were, I told her. And you're wrong about that Magua fleet, too. They know how to fight. They won't do it fairly, either. They'll stand off in high orbit and blow this planet to fragments. She kept gazing up at the sky as she talked to me. Looking up like that, her face was as pretty as a picture. I couldn't take my eyes off her, just as she couldn't take her eyes off the stars. Seizing opportunities had always been one of my strong areas. Accordingly, I slipped my arm around her thin waist and put my head up close to hers, staring up like she did.
What? You're touching me again? Is this some kind of tradition on Earth?
It sure is, I said. Do you like it?
I'm not sure. It's unexpected and provocative. Are you attempting to mate again?
Would you like that? She blinked at me. We were close. Close enough to kiss. I already had one arm snaked around her waist, and for me that's halfway to home base. But I didn't pull her to me and go for it. I let her think about it first. This kind of girl was a thinker. Sometimes you had to let that kind decide what was what for themselves. She came around in the end and melted up against me. We kissed, and I held her close. We both looked up at the skies again.
You're looking for that fleet, aren't you?
I asked her. Waiting to see the moment it arrives?
Yes.
What will your people do when it shows up?
We'll fight. First, the AI ship will challenge them. It will do battle. We've analyzed galactic warships as best we can. It was built to deal with them.
You mean it has more tricks up its sleeve than just throwing out X-ray missiles? She laughed quietly.
Yes.
Good, I told her. Because you're damn well going to need all the help you can get. After that, I made my move. My patience had paid off. She was ready and interested. We soon moved to her apartments and made love there. All the while, with the window open, we could watch a nighttime view of the overly bright stars near Arcturus. The sky made our lovemaking surreal, like we were embracing in open space itself. Chapter 57 The next morning, I awoke alone. Arcturus was blazing in the heavens on a rare, cloudless day. I immediately had a sinking feeling like I'd overslept on Easter Sunday,
Bouncing out of bed and pulling on my boots, I soon went searching for breakfast and Florimel in that order. I found her about an hour later, working below ground in the dark labs. She looked at me with a pale, worried face. "What's wrong?" I asked her. "Your people won't talk to me."
"They don't entirely trust you,"
she said, going back to her work.
"They don't? Well, what about you?"
She looked at me, troubled.
"I don't know,"
she said.
"Your people invaded our world. You take what you want, you kill, and you bed me like a captive."
"Now hold on," I said. "Did I misunderstand last night? Was I in the wrong?" Florimel heaved a sigh.
"No,"
she said.
"I'm sorry, but the battle fleet has arrived, and it's not cooperating."
That froze my mind over. My mouth hung wide, and I spun around on the heel of my left boot. There was a monitor displaying deep space nearby. It showed blank stars.
"I don't see them," I said.
"No, you're not meant to. They're not optically visible yet."
That was a stunner. Sure, we'd never seen the battle fleet except for that one day they annexed Earth. But they'd been very visible in the skies during that dark time. Every vid from a century back showed countless ships, plain as day. "Are they stealth ships?" I asked.
"They have that capacity, yes,"
she said.
"But they're also hanging back, far from our planet. They're at the very fringe of the Arcturus system, where our two gas giants orbit."
"Florimel," I asked, turning back to her. She looked up from her work, and I took her hand in mine.
"Come with me,"
I said.
"Just you.
Or everyone. We can get aboard the NAB transport. There's plenty of room. You don't have to stay here and die. There's no point in that." She looked at me with those perfectly shaped eyes, and I could see I'd gotten through to her. At least part of her wanted to go with me.
"Where will we go?"
she asked.
"To Earth? We won't be welcome there."
"There are lots of planets in the universe," I told her. "The battle fleet has a weakness. It can't be everywhere at once." After a moment of tortured thought, she pulled her hand out of mine.
"No,"
she said.
"We'll fight."
"Girl," I said, flummoxed. I'd given her the best shot of James McGill charm I had in me, and she'd shrugged it off.
"You can't win. What's the point?"
"We don't know that. Not yet."
"Well, I know it. The Magua aren't running a quarter of the galaxy because they're a bunch of chumps. You might hurt them a little, but all that we'll do is piss them off."
"We'll see."
My eyes turned back to the monitors. They were still blank as far as I could tell. "How do you even know there are any ships out there?"
"We're using gravimetrics. No radar, visual, or other light spectra will work to detect them. But they have mass. They can't hide."
"I see. How many are there?"
"About 4% of this planet's mass was just added to the star system. That works out to about 1,000 large ships. It's a guess, I admit, but an educated one."
1,000 ships?
I groaned. "Come on, girl. Let's run while we can."
"No, I'm sorry."
She'd left me in a tough spot. I eyed the others in her team. There really weren't a lot of people on this planet, but they'd done amazing things. It would be a shame to lose them all.
"I've got an idea," I said. "Have you got a data core, something with all your knowledge stored?"
"Of course."
"Well, give it to me. That way it won't be lost if the battle fleet wins."
They looked dubious, but logic won out after a few seconds of thought. Florimel nodded, and her minions didn't argue. I'd gotten a weird vibe from the lab techs over the last few days. They weren't normal in the head, not by human standards. I got the feeling they were clones, but they didn't look like clones. Whatever the case was, by birth or conditioning, they followed Florimel around like she was their mother duck. They gave me a copy of their data core.
which was an organic thing in a box. It sloshed when I carried it and smelled like a dirty fish tank. "How can we interface with this?" I asked.
"I'll put an app on your tapper,"
she said, and she did so quickly. Taking the data core back to Nostrum, I was confronted by Carlos and Natasha.
"Centurion,"
Natasha asked,
"are you alone?"
"That's right, Specialist. They're not coming with us."
"Fools," Carlos said. "They don't stand a chance when the battle fleet gets here."
"I've got bad news on that front," I said, handing the data core off to a couple of wide-eyed recruits. "Handle that with care," I told them. "It's got a copy of their research on it." They got a power cart and hauled it away like it was the Ark of the Covenant itself.
"What's the bad news?" Carlos asked me.
"Oh, just that Battlefleet 921 is already in this star system and approaching. They detected it using gravimetrics." Natasha turned white, and even Carlos looked concerned.
"How long do we have?"
Natasha asked. "Until they start shooting, who knows?" She looked at me and bit her lip.
"Should we run?"
"We can't run," I told her. "It's too late for that."
"Why?"
"Think about it. The Galactics have been in the system observing us for some time. They're probably trying to figure out what's wrong with this ship. Maybe they're sending us secret messages in code and we're not answering." Her eyes darted from side to side. I could almost see the wheels turning in that pretty head of hers.
"I should have thought of that. I should recommend action, but I don't know what to do, James."
"We're screwed," Carlos said, throwing up his hands. "It's as simple as that. We're just screwed. Sometimes it's easier to accept death than hope for a revive back on Earth. Let's make something up, then transmit it home. If they get it in a few years, maybe they'll revive us."
I said. "I like part of your idea, Carlos, but it needs work. Natasha, check every channel to see if the Galactics are transmitting to this ship." She looked at me oddly.
"We're really not going to run?"
"They'll know this ship isn't controlled by a NARB crew if we do."
"How are they not going to know that anyway, James?"
she demanded.
"We can't just slip into their ranks silently without making some kind of report."
"Normally that'd be true, but we're about to see a battle. In the heat of battle, things can get confusing and protocols might be broken."
"Oh, yeah," Carlos said. "I can see where this is going. Excuse me while I go inject myself with a quart of morphine, okay?"
"Stay at your post, Specialist," I told him without a glance in his direction. "Natasha, can you hook me up?"
"All right," she said. "I'll try, but you're crazy, James."
"Always and forever," I agreed. Natasha began her work, but she didn't finish before the battle started. About an hour after I had first been shown the enemy ships by Florimel, the fireworks began. The Empire ships revealed themselves in all their glory. Honestly, I wanted to crap my pants just a little. Grabbing the comm gear and connecting to Florimel, I saw she looked relatively calm, if distracted, on the big screen. "They're coming for you," I told her. "Transport up here right now."
"I'm sorry, James,"
she said.
"Win or lose, we're not leaving this place."
"Win or lose?" I asked incredulously. "They'll blot out your sun when they reach orbit. There are too many of them for your robot ship to handle, no matter how smart it is."
"You can watch, but you must stay quiet," she told me. "I can't afford to be distracted now."
I slapped the top of my helmet with a gauntlet. I didn't know what else to say to her. The fight unfolded in an unusual way. It was a scary battle, if you could call it a battle. It was among the strangest operations I'd yet to witness. Truly advanced technology is akin to magic. At least that's what they told me back in officer training school at Central. This battle seemed to prove out the logic of that statement. First off, Florimel and her lab people began to play some really cool tricks once the enemy fleet approached and revealed itself. A series of mines lit up in the middle of the Galactic's formation. How they got there, how they'd gone undetected, I didn't know. They weren't even explosions, exactly.
"Masers,"
Natasha told me in awe.
They've got functioning maser weapons, and they've deployed them right in the enemy fleet's core.
What the hell is a maser? I asked, but she didn't answer right away. Violet streams of light came out of these pinpoints of origin, like spines from a sea anemone. These beams lanced out in 100 random directions at once. Many of them missed all targets, but some landed. The enemy fleet was tightly bunched. They took hits to scores of their sleek vessels. The beams punched through hulls and ripped right through the skin of a stricken ship and out the other side. The masers didn't burn for long, only a split second before burning out forever. But in that time, they were like landmines in a marching formation of troops. Ships were torn apart and destroyed. Dozens of them.
Holy shit, Carlos called out. We are dead. We are so dead. We're so dead that they won't even be able to
shut the hell up, I ordered, and he fell to muttering darkly.
Masers are theoretical weapons, Natasha told me. They're an older tech developed before lasers on Earth, but this kind of power, they might be using fusion bombs to power them briefly.
How'd they get them out there and in the middle of the fleet? I demanded. She shrugged.
Maybe they were sitting out there all along.
More masers went off, but the Magua ships had shielding now. Either the Galactics hadn't had their shields in place before, or more likely they'd focused them all forward, expecting a more traditional attack. Whatever the case, their ships stopped dying to the masers, and they advanced steadily.
Why didn't they use these masers on Nostrum when we approached? I asked Natasha.
You said yourself they didn't want to. Isn't that what Florimel told you? That they could have wiped us out, but they didn't take us seriously?
Well, I said, I can now see why they—
The Magua are firing back, Natasha said, leaning over her instruments and making adjustments to our optics.
Now that the fireworks had begun, neither side announced itself or made any declarations of doom. Battlefleet 921 slid forward, advancing despite their losses. They seemed powerful, implacable. Just watching them made me want to freak out a little, like Carlos. The Galactics opened up with some kind of freaky attack that had explosions popping all around the AI ship, which was still parked in orbit over Rogue World.
What the hell are those strikes? I demanded.
T-bombs, she said calmly. The Magua are trying to teleport bombs inside the ship. The AI ship must have good shielding, though, as it's not working.
T-bombs,
I said, my mouth hanging open again. Thinking it would be a good idea to record this, I tapped the record all button on my tapper and streamed it to the data core. There was a faint hope we'd see Earth again before we were snuffed out, and I wanted to take home a gift of intel. Seeing as how we were probably doomed as a species, I figured it was the least I could do for those clueless bastards sitting home at Central. Chapter 58. The AI ship just sat there like a spider in a web, waiting for the approaching Galactics to get closer. It was ominous.
Pull us back around to the far side of the planet, I told Natasha.
It won't help, she told me. If they lay just one of those T-bombs on us, we'll be wiped out.
I didn't ask for advice, specialist. Retreat out of sight pronto. She did as I'd ordered without anger or much in the way of hope in her face. Our big transport ponderously looped around the planet and slid behind it, out of direct sight from the approaching fleet. Naturally, we still had drones and the like reporting back visuals and other forms of data so we could watch the battle unfold. The Galactics seemed to have given up on the T-bomb approach. They were moving closer to bring their main guns to bear. The AI ship, however, wasn't cooperating. It had started acting oddly. Instead of being in one fixed location, it looked like it was blinking around into random spots every second or two. Even the timing on the movement was randomized.
Look at that, Natasha breathed. It's phasing, shifting in time and space. It's got to be almost impossible to hit.
They're sure trying, I said, watching the approaching fleet open up with their main batteries. The big guns were going off. Much of the back-and-forth assault utilized radiations that would normally be invisible to the human eye, but our computers compensated when displaying the situation optically. The AI ship was firing back, too. It had missiles, at first, X-ray types like the ones it had used on us, but those were failing to penetrate now. So it shifted to a single bright beam that was depicted as a lavender line on our screens. This line stretched out with what seemed like a languid pace, but it was really moving at the speed of light. The distance between the two opposing forces was great enough to take several light seconds to traverse. But what I didn't understand was how this lavender beam was slicing laterally through the galactic fleet. "How's it doing that?" I demanded. "It looks like a sword cutting through space from one point to another." Natasha nodded.
"The effect seems to be related to the random jumps the AI ship is making. It's slashing that beam in random lateral directions with each shifting of its position. Absolutely fascinating technology."
I glanced at her, thinking it was just like Natasha to get excited about tech, even when it was terrifying. The AI beams were scoring hits as the Empire ships came closer. It slashed and danced, cutting apart enemy cruisers and battleships each time. It almost always got one, sometimes two. Once I even saw it kill three in one shifting sweep. But the battle fleet was reacting, responding, and taking countermeasures. I had to wonder if even those smarty-pants galactic core dwellers had ever encountered anything like this. They weren't running yet, so maybe they had.
"They're widening their formation," Natasha said. "They're realigning their shields. There, see that? The AI ship jumped and slashed, but the beam didn't knock out the last battleship that was attacked."
I watched the ship in question. It had been hit hard, its shield sparked and dulled to a flickering orange color. That ship immediately pulled out of formation and retreated. This became the new tactic. Each ship that was hit survived, as often as not, and immediately fled to the back of the line. As they became more scattered, the AI vessel could only hit one at a time, and it was only getting kills rarely now.
"They're down to 800 ships," Natasha said. "There were over 1,000 to start. The AI ship has performed magnificently."
"If one gets through, it will be too many," I said. We watched, tensely, and the battle shifted again. The Empire ships were no longer targeting the dancing phantom in orbit. They turned their weapons instead on the blue glass dome the ship was protecting.
"No,"
I said, seeing beams lash down from space and strike the dome. "It can't hold, can it?" Natasha shrugged.
"I don't know. I wouldn't have thought the ship could have held out this long."
Bombs were falling now. Not all the way down from space, that would have taken hours. Instead, they were being teleported into the atmosphere itself and allowed to fall down near the dome by the attraction of gravity.
"Get Florimel online," I ordered.
Natasha did so quickly, and I stared at the glare and looming mushroom clouds that now obscured the dome itself. For a minute, I couldn't hear anything other than static. Then the explosion ceased and the EMP effect dispersed.
"Florimel!"
I demanded.
"Can you hear me?"
"James,"
she said, her voice scratching due to static.
"You should leave here. This can't last much longer."
"You have to gate up to our ship. We still have the poles set up here. Come through and save yourselves."
"We can't do that, James."
"If you won't do it to save yourselves," I said, feeling desperate as more and more Empire ships came into range. "Come along to save us. We need you. Earth needs you."
"No,"
she repeated.
"The gateway transmission, even the fact we're in contact right now, it's all been documented. Earth could be expunged for that alone, James."
My shoulders sagged in defeat. "What do we do then?" I asked. "We're screwed regardless."
"I'm sorry, James. This was never meant to include you and your people. But remember, you did come here uninvited."
"So we did," I admitted.
"Don't worry,"
she said.
"We'll always be with you."
Then the screen went dark, and she was gone.
On the surface of the rogue planet, the skies lit up with one final dawn. A dawn so bright, so full of released energy and awesome power, that it would never be duplicated. The remains of the planet were expanding outward after that, gaseous, plasma, fire and dust.
The whole world just blew up, I said, stunned.
The crust has been vaporized,
Natasha said.
But the bedrock core will still be there afterward. When it cools, it will look much the same, but without an atmosphere.
Her voice was deadpan and cool. She'd lost all hope. I knew what she was thinking. Earth was next. I was, too. How could we think of anything else while watching the end of another world that had dared to oppose the Empire? Earth school children were taught about the fate of planets that didn't submit to the rule of the Empire. But all that had been talk and stories. I'd never actually seen it happen. Not like this. I'd seen a few planet busters fall on a cephalopod colony once, sure. But to see the surface of an inhabited planet shorn away and blasted into space like that, well, it was an experience I hoped I'd never have to live through again. Chapter 59. Natasha gazed at me in shock. I looked around the bridge of the NARB ship. Most of my surviving unit members were here now, watching. They all looked like they'd watched their own deaths. No one said a word or cracked a joke. Not even Carlos.
Your orders, Centurion?
Natasha asked me. I'm thinking. Carlos closed his eyes and shook his head in defeat. After a minute, I snapped my fingers and pointed at the helm controls. We've got a gun on this thing, don't we? Natasha blinked at me in surprise.
We do, but it's only a small shore bombardment laser.
Doesn't matter. Power it up and attack the AI ship right now. Her expression indicated she thought I was crazy.
We can't possibly...
Natasha, that's an order. She turned back to her controls, and soon we were swinging around and accelerating toward the battle.
Wait a minute, Carlos complained. We're going back out into the open? We should just run. Let's warp out of here.
We can't, I told him.
Can't? Why not? Something with the warp core?
I looked at him seriously. The Empire knows we're here. We've been idling this whole time, standing around with our thumbs in our butts. If we run now, we'll be marked as a rebel force. You just watched how the Empire deals with rebels. You don't want that for Earth, do you?
No, sir,
he said, and he finally shut up. We came out from behind the smoldering planet and approached the AI ship from behind.
Get closer, I said.
We can hit them from here, Natasha said.
Then start firing and charge right in close. White-faced, she did as I asked. The ship accelerated, pushing us all into seats that were better shaped to fit a NARB's rear end. At last, when we were alarmingly close to the action, our laser cannon flashed out shot after shot. They were short bursts, maybe a half second long each time.
We're missing!
The target is dancing around still, sir.
Guess where it will be next and get closer so we can hit it before it can shift. Natasha pressed on, taking us closer every second. The debris from the destroyed planet had now billowed out so far into space, it was beginning to get into our way. Our shields flashed and alarms whined, informing us we were in some kind of meteor or dust storm. We ignored all this and bowled our way closer, coming up on the stern of the AI ship. We were far closer than any of the Empire vessels, but so far the AI had ignored us utterly.
It probably has calculated we're not a serious threat, Natasha said.
It is calculated correctly,
Carlos interjected, unable to contain himself.
Get in there and shoot it right up the tailpipe, I ordered.
Natasha's hand shook a little as she followed my orders.
All around me, my unit's finest looked like a pack of sick dogs. I knew they were thinking they'd fought hard, completed their mission, and now, as a just reward, they were about to die because of the suicidal actions of their sole surviving but crazy officer. I didn't argue with them or explain my actions. They were right to be worried, but we also lacked time to fuss about it. As we rushed into the battle against a ship with about a million times our firepower, the people around me grew quiet. Not even Carlos had something funny to say. We knew.